Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, and welcome to the Inclusive Class Podcast. Through interviews and discussions, it's our goal to explore the promise and practice of inclusive education. I'm Nicole Erdicks, and I'm one of your hosts for the show. I'm a parent, inclusion teacher, and creator of the online resource, theinclusiveclass.com. And joining me here this morning on the Inclusive Class is my co-host, Terry Morrow. Hi, Terry.
Good morning, Nicole, and welcome to all our listeners. I am Terry Morrow. I'm the author of 50 Ways to Support Your Child's Special Education, and I write about special needs for About.com at specialchildren.about.com. I'd like to mention to anybody out there listening to us live that we're not taking phone calls, even if it says so on the Blog Talk Radio page. And I still, after all this time, I am still not comfortable bringing people on and talking to them, so I am wimping out again this week. As we're sitting here, we're talking just before we came on the air about graduations. It's a graduation in my town today. We have like the latest graduation possible every year, it seems. They're going to be graduating in July eventually. It just gets ridiculous. It's difficult for me to believe that it's been a year since my son graduated. And I mean, that seemed like such an enormous thing, and yet here we are a year later. He's got a year of college under his belt. He's done well with it. He's passed all his classes, and it's been hard. But, we really didn't know at this time last year whether this was something that was at all realistic. And it has been. So, inclusion worked for him, and it's working for him now in college, and it's really been inspiring to see at his college how many kids with disabilities there are. Just to be in college students and getting around and doing their thing. It's been interesting because I sit there with him. I sit there at the school all day, and he checks in with me at various times. And I feel like lately other kids have been checking in with me too. being the college mom all the kids with special needs, they just kind of need to touch base with a mom. I'm there
That's
at the
great.
Table. But, and now with the graduation today, my son's friend is graduating and has sort of, has had less of an inclusive road and is now looking at not very many inclusive options at all.
Right.
And it just makes me really think that, as much as I wish we were further along in the school aspect of inclusion, it just really seems like we're still fighting the same fights we fought 10 or 12 years ago when I started this with my daughter. But where we really haven't figured the road out so much is what happens after high school. For kids who are able to go to college, there does seem to be some progress. I certainly see it at my son's school. But for ones for whom that is not a realistic option, boy, they just really fall off a cliff, And we work so hard to say it's important for everybody to be included. It's important for everybody to be together. That can't end with graduation. That can't be, thank you for playing. Go off to your sheltered workshop or your, excluded place. So that's a big challenge, and I see a lot of conversations. I see it between parents of kids with special needs online lately about not wanting our kids to be pitied and wanting our kids to be, fully included, and that's great, but if there's nothing for them afterwards, that's not a viable model.
Options.
So, I challenge everybody listening to, even as we're fighting these fights today for when our kids are in school, to be thinking to the next step. This can't just be a 12-year experiment and then we go and off our separate ways. It has to go on from there. So I step off my soapbox now and let's talk about our guest. Many thoughts on my head today.
Lots of good things, though, and enjoy the graduation ceremonies. I know
it will be long and hot and boring, but inspiring in some small way.
Inspiring, too. And this is your son's friend, too, right? So
yes, it will be. It is inspiring for him and for his parents, although also somewhat terrifying. So,
the
celebratory part of it is great, but this is the end of everything we've known and everything we've worked for, and we have no idea what's coming next. That part is a little hard. I was in those shoes last year thinking.
Yeah, wondering what's going to happen next.
Oh, my gosh, this is going to work out. Yeah. So,
I can't believe it's been a year already. It's gone by so fast.
It really has.
So many,
even my son
so many
says,
successes.
Gone by so fast.
Yeah. No, it's great, so, though. I mean, lots of successes this past year. So,
yeah,
it's great to reflect on that. And actually, I just, as I was listening to you talk about what's next for the many of these kids, it reminds me of a blog that I came across recently called Life After IEPs. I don't know if you've ever seen that
one. Yes, I've seen that blog. That is a good one.
Yeah, I'm going to have a, I haven't had a chance to really go through it, but I'm going to have a look at it now because you've got me thinking what happens next for a lot of these
kids.
You push it all the way through school and then all
uh-huh.
of a sudden,
uh-huh.
goodbye, see you later. Like you said,
yeah.
thanks for playing.
Anyway, and especially if they've been used to being included, it's hard, you know, because they see their peers going on to things that they're not. But anyway.
That's right. Yeah. No, that's a good point. Thanks for bringing that up. But we're going to get on track here and get on to our interview this morning. And like I said, speaking of playing and inclusion, we're actually going to be talking about an interesting topic today that we haven't broached on before, and that is inclusive playgrounds. We've talked about ways to include kids in programs, ways to include kids in community activities outside of school and in school, but we haven't really talked about ways to include kids on the school playground or in a community playground. And one of the things that really facilitates that inclusion is the physical structure of the playground. Mm-hmm. And our expert today, Mara Kaplan, is going to talk to us about inclusive playgrounds and what needs to exist and what kinds of structures need to be there in order to facilitate that inclusion. So I'd like to welcome Mara Kaplan to the show. Good morning,
Thank
Mara.
Thank you. Good morning.
Before I ask you your questions, I just wanted to give the audience a brief background about you. You're an educator, an advocate, and a parent of a child with profound disabilities. And I understand that you've had more than 17 years of experience reviewing toys and designing playgrounds. And you have a company or a business called Let Kids Play, which designs inclusive playgrounds, reviews, and recommends toys. And you also edit the website accessibleplayground.net, which includes a comprehensive listing of accessible playgrounds in North America. That's fabulous. I didn't even know that existed. So that's wonderful for a resource for parents. Is there anything you'd like to add to that, Mara, or have I summed
it
up
for you? I think
you
did a good job.
Good. Thank you. I just wanted to start with a really basic question because I didn't give this a lot of thought personally myself before we came across this topic, but aren't all playgrounds inclusive, wouldn't you say? Or, I mean, obviously they're not because your job is to make them more inclusive, but for somebody who's just, you know, walking onto a playground area or onto a school field and looking at the playground setup itself, are they generally not designed for most kids?
If they are older, then they don't even meet the current ADA standards. Now, if you think that ADA is enough for inclusion, then newer playgrounds may make the bill. However, unless there is specific design considerations of a playground, it doesn't support all of our kids, whether it's physically, emotionally, socially. We need to think about where we place equipment, what equipment we put in, and things like that to be able to really support and encourage our children to be able to play with others.
And I like how you brought up the aspect that it's not just a physical. Well, you were saying that it was not just a physical means not just a way to support physical inclusion, but also social and emotional. And I hope that we'll touch on that more later because that's a really good point. When it comes to inclusion, it's not just the physical aspect of it. There's an entire, you know, entire other arena that we need to look at, too, for these kids in terms of their development. Now, what should parents be looking for when they're looking for an inclusive playground? What do they need to be on the lookout for?
Well, I think there are a couple of things. And it's interesting because most of it that I talk about isn't equipment-based, which is what people think that it should be. First of all, you want to look for a playground with what we call synthetic surfacing, whether that's tiles or turf or what we call pour-in-place, which is that puffy stuff you step on. That makes it a really universal playground. It means people with babies can easily push their strollers, people using wheelchairs can get across, and people who have children who pick things up are not putting things in their mouths that we really don't want them to. The engineered wood fiber, the wood mulch, that does meet ADA if it's maintained and raked, really doesn't promote enough of inclusion. I get my son's wheelchair stuck in wood mulch all of the time. It does meet ADA, and it is a less expensive option, but I have seen, and many parents have told me that they have children who with autism or a two-year-old who just picks up that wood mulch and puts it in their mouth, and that's just yucky. So you want to look for that kind of surfacing. The other type of thing you want to look for is a fence that surrounds the whole playground, because we have plenty of children who are runners, and we want to make sure that they're safe in this environment. And, again, it's all about universal design. My sister has a set of twins, and when they were three, she would only go to playgrounds with fences because they would run and go in two different directions, and she couldn't go both places. A fence makes it so that children can play more independently without a parent hovering.
Right.
Another good thing is an orientation path, a wide, even path that goes all the way around the playground so that a child can walk all the way around the playground and get a full look at everything that there is before they decide they want to engage in the play. And they can decide when they want to engage in the play, and it makes it easier for them to get out of the play when they get overwhelmed. So those are my three favorite things. And then you want to start to look for equipment-based things. Are there things that support movement? Because spinning and swinging and rocking are really important for our kids. So are those things on the playground? Are there pieces of equipment that offer more support for a child who doesn't have good trunk control? So is there a swing that's like a bucket swing? Are there backs on seesaws? Those pieces provide that kind of support. And then are there pieces that children who cannot leave a wheelchair can participate in? And then do we have things that support sensory exploration, and do we have places that you can escape and regroup and come and join the play again?
Wow. You've touched on so many aspects that I wouldn't even think of when I'm looking at a playground, and it makes me realize how not inclusive so many school playgrounds are.
Yes, school playgrounds are notoriously not good playgrounds, and you will also often see kids walking the perimeter of the playground, and when you ask people, they'll say, oh, see, they just want to be by themselves. Getting exercise isn't that great. But often it's because the kid isn't being supported to know how to enter the play and is really isolating themselves. And so we might be inclusive inside the classroom, but then as soon as we hit recess, it's a segregated environment.
It's a whole different story. That's so interesting. Now, what is the Inclusive Play Design Guide? Is it a manual that you refer to, or is it guidelines?
Yes, it is. I had the privilege of working with a very diverse group of parents and professionals. There was an expert in child development, an expert in playground design and landscape design, physical therapy, sensory processing disorder, And we worked together under the support of PlayWorld Systems, which is a playground manufacturer who wanted to support this. And the guide is really wonderful because it's not a sales tool. It is really about these issues around inclusive play. And it gives you an in-depth way of a community group to start looking at the issues around, make small choices if, you know, that's all you can do, or make large choices if you can, you know, start from scratch and have some money. And this really walks you through all of the issues. There's a section on planning and who to get involved, and then there's a section about layout and access, and then one on play richness, which talks about all the different types of play and how you can make those more inclusive, a section on selecting equipment and placing that equipment, and then the support features, because we so well know as parents that if there aren't good benches, we're not going to stay very long at that playground.
Yeah.
Because, you know, okay, I'm bored, let's go, kids. So there's a whole section on how to provide the support features so that families want to stay at the playground.
Yeah.
And you can get the inclusive play design guide for free at my website, letkidsplay.com. Follow the links for accessible playgrounds, and it will take you right to be able to download this document. And it really is a wonderful resource for communities that are looking at inclusive play.
It sounds like something schools should have as well.
Absolutely. PTAs should definitely look at this because there are certain strategies you can do that in an existing playground you might be able to change and implement if you're adding one piece of equipment. And there's certainly ways to promote inclusion without spending any additional money. Additional money is always good because you can make it even better. But there are ways of putting things in with the exact same equipment you were going to pick before, but just rotating them around so that they support children more often. Often I get groups that say, well, let's put an autism corner together. I know that they like cozy places, and I know they like musical instruments, and I know that they like things that spin. So let's put all those three things together. And I have to say, well, first of all, that's not really supporting inclusion if you're calling it the autism corner. But secondly, putting the cozy place where you want to go to regroup next to the musical instruments, it's just not very smart. Yeah. You would need to put that cozy place someplace where it's quiet. So it's those types of decisions. I'm going to still buy the same three pieces of equipment, but let's place them a little bit strategically.
Right. Great information.
That's a good point. What can we do to make playgrounds interesting for all children?
Well, this is a really important thing. Often when we create what we call accessible or inclusive playgrounds, they are ramped mazes, and I call them ramps to nowhere. You know, it doesn't get very high off the ground because ramps are expensive and it takes a long time to get high enough, so you need a really big space. And they're boring. So if you are typically developing and you're at this playground, you're bored instantaneously. Mm-hmm. Now, you can have fun running up and down the ramps, but after a while, there's no challenge on this playground for you.
Too easy. Yeah.
And a really good inclusive playground is offering challenge for all kids so that there might be three spinning activities, and each one gets a little bit harder, and they're all placed together, so we're all spinning at the same time, but it becomes more and more challenging the more you're able to balance, the more that you're able to move on your own, and we want to look at that for all different types of play.
Yeah, I imagine the fairly tame ramps and stuff get boring for the kid in the wheelchair, too, at some point.
Oh, absolutely, especially if you can't transfer out of that wheelchair. What are you doing up there? You know, you might have a tic-tac-toe play panel, but woohoo, that's not very much fun. Whereas if we have what are called gliders, which mm-hmm. is a piece of equipment that a child in a wheelchair can roll onto, and lots of typical kids can get on, and between them they make it rock and move back and forth. Well, then we've
That's
created
cool.
a pretend play place. We've created an inclusive place, someplace that all kids are having fun.
Mm-hmm.
So much better use of money than a bunch of ramps.
Mm-hmm. Yes, yes, that's
yeah.
true. It's something that you have to really think through, and I'm sure lots of communities go into it with enthusiasm, but not, you know, a lot of thinking about what really works for kids and what really works for kids with all different interests and all different, you know, not every kid with special needs wants exactly the same playground. So,
no, of course not. They're
when
kids.
You see one of these, it's sad when you see one of these little things, and it's obviously that a lot of, you know, heart has gone into it, but it's just this inert bunch of ramps with a, like you said, with little number puzzle. So it's like, well, you know, after the first two times you go on that, you're really ready to go to the playground over there that, you know, you could fall off and hurt something. So
exactly.
Unfortunately, that's what kids, a lot of kids like to do.
Right, and there is a whole issue between risk and safety. But
yeah.
if you've got a good safety servicing, offering children risk, children of all abilities,
yes.
To
mm-hmm.
risk at their own developmental level is a really important growth strategy. Because
it
if
is.
You can risk on a playground, then you can risk in a social situation and you can risk
yeah.
in a work situation.
And it's important for kids with disabilities to have that opportunity for risk, too. You know, they are even more
we do not
covered with a cocoon of safety.
Right. We do not give them enough chances to be independent and enough chances
yeah.
to fall down, whether that's,
right.
you know, physically or any other way. And it's just
mm-hmm.
as important for them as it is for typically developing children. And we wrap our typically developing children these days in bubble wrap, and
yeah.
we're just even worse
mm-hmm.
for our kids with disabilities.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we really are. But
yeah.
so it's, you know, it's great if we can think of ways to make these playgrounds both. Yeah, you know, I was talking with my son about, you know, you want to give them the opportunity of risk with a really good safety net underneath, so you know, so they have the illusion of risk at any rate.
Absolutely.
So that's great if we can build that into these playgrounds, and we have the benches nearby where you can watch everything.
Right,
and,
exactly. And
make
where
sure
you
that they're
place
having...
the benches is really important because, you know, when it's the slightly older kid-type equipment, you want to put the benches a little bit further away. And when it's
yeah.
young kid stuff, you want to put the benches closer in. So people don't even think, you know, at that level.
No.
Right.
Yeah. Such a great point.
Yeah. Where can people go to find out about playgrounds in their community? I suppose they would know
well,
about playgrounds
as you mentioned
in their community,
before,
nearby
I have,
communities.
I have a directory.
Mm-hmm.
It's on accessibleplayground.net. It's done by state and by province, and so you can go in and look in your state. You can also search by different types of playgrounds. But
yeah.
people need to know that I've not been to all these playgrounds. I do research and I read what's on them. And if you
uh-huh.
go and you determine that it is that I am wrong and it is not an inclusive playground, you should send
mm-hmm.
me an email at Mara at letkidsplay and let me know.
Mm-hmm.
Because
I'm
only as good as what people share with me. There's also
mm-hmm.
the ability to go on and add your own playgrounds. And so if you
okay.
know of a splash pad that is specifically, you know, really inclusive or a great playground or a great
mm-hmm.
carousel, please go and add that to our list because we are so much stronger when we do it together.
Yeah, that's a great idea. Also, you know, I would imagine to keep up on these places. Do these kinds of playgrounds require, like, more maintenance than the average playground? Do they get more wear and tear or more dangerous conditions on them than the average playground? I'm thinking about ramps as opposed to, like, metal steps.
No, they don't. Playgrounds are typically designed to last about 10 years, especially if you put the synthetic surfacing in. What really
mm-hmm.
is the time-consuming and maintenance is maintaining your wood mulch. Wood mulch needs to be constantly raked and replenished. And when it comes to safety, wood mulch is a great safety surface as long as it's maintained, but we all know that it gets kicked out under the swings and at the bottom of the slides, and it needs to be continually maintained. Otherwise, we lose not only the any accessibility that there is with it, but we lose the safety structure with it. So it's really the cost for synthetic surfacing is up front, but then you don't have the long-term maintenance costs with it.
That's good. Well, what steps should a member of the community take to advocate for an inclusive playground in their neighborhood?
Well, the first things you want to do is you want to pull a group of people together so it's not you. You know, we're always better in numbers. You want to think about as wide of a group of people as you can. Often this gets started by a family who has a child with spina bifida or cerebral palsy, you know, who physically cannot go to a playground. But if you want, you know, everything that we've talked about, you want to start pulling in the autism groups. You want to pull in grandparents groups. You want to pull in twins groups. Anything that you think of people that would have an affinity for what you believe. And then you want to figure out who's in charge here. If it's a school playground, does the PTA have all of the power? Does the principal? Is it the superintendent? Is it the school board? Who do you need to go to advocate? And in any community, it could be any of those people or a combination of those people. In a community, it could be the city council. It could be the mayor. It could be a parks and recs department. Could be a park district. So you've got some research ahead of you to figure out who controls these things. And then you want to get the facts. You need to know everything there is about inclusive playgrounds so that when they ask the questions, you know what you're talking about. So what does an inclusive playground mean? What are the advantages for all of our children? And who in the community is going to benefit? You know, when you start throwing out that 20% of this community has a special needs, which is about the statistic we look at, politicians start paying a little bit more attention, especially when you start saying, well, we've got 20%, but none of those people live in a vacuum. They have parents, they have siblings, they have children, and all of those people benefit when we're talking about an inclusive playground. You can, again, visit Let Kids Play, and I have a list of articles and research about the benefits of play and inclusion that people can use to write a good fact sheet for what they're doing. And then, you know, you put a good fact sheet together, build your alliances and coalitions, and begin to advocate. And what you're looking for is a group of, you know, whoever's in power to be able to give you some land. And whatever, and you want them to be able to maintain it into the long run. Your group may end up having to say, hey, we'll fundraise for it and we'll help design it, but we want you to take it over at the end. And so that's sort of the steps a lot of the communities take.
It's great that you have that resource online that people can go to start to, you know, to figure out what they need to do to advocate for that. Oh, and that's our school bell saying that unfortunately we have to wrap up our conversation for today, but this has been some really great information for people and something that's certainly very, very much needed, both on awareness that this stuff exists and the need to start putting it into practice. So thank you so much, Mara, for being our guest today.
Thank you.
And I would like to thank our listeners for tuning into our program this morning. Please note that we won't be having a show next week. We are going to sleep late after July 4th, and we will return on July 12th at 9 a.m. Eastern Time with Carol Quirk from the Maryland Coalition for Inclusive Education. In the meantime, you can follow us on Facebook and Twitter, where Nicole tweets under the name inclusive underscore class, and I am at Mamatude, M-A-M-A-T-U-D-E. Mara, are you on Twitter?
I am, at Let Kids Play.
Okay, that's easy
to
remember.
Thank you.
And finally, you can download our past podcasts for free on Stitcher and iTunes. Goodbye, everybody, and have a great week.
Goodbye.